This is episode 78 of the Magic Detective Podcast. On this episode, you'll hear about when magic saves the day. That and more on this episode of the Magic Detective Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Magic Detective Podcast, your podcast home for magic history. I'm your host, Dean Carnegie. I am the Magic Detective, and this is episode 78. Now, I think every magician, amateur or professional, probably has one of these stories, or will have at some point. And maybe not as grand as some of the ones I'm going to share with you, but still, it's a story where magic saved the day. Or, in some cases, it could be magic cheered up or brightened the spirits during a difficult period. You don't have to be famous to have one of these stories. You do have to be aware. I have a story from my own life of a young girl. She was a young deaf girl who I chose to help me during one of my shows. And just to give you a little context, before the show, I noticed how difficult she was, how everyone was trying to work with her, but nobody could seem to break through or help. And many had just given up long ago, you could tell. But I was new in the room, and when I saw her raise her hand during my show, when I asked for audience assistance, I decided to take a chance. Now, keep in mind, I don't know sign language, but I just thought, you know what, if I'm patient and helpful here, maybe I can break through. And as it was, she picked up on everything really fast. She was the perfect, the ideal assistant. And the teachers and her fellow students, they were stunned in silence over how cooperative she was. And then at the end, they all burst out into just this huge amount of applause for her. She was a star. Now, I didn't do anything special. Magic, I think, has a way of making everything a little better. I just decided that I was going to be a little bit more patient and help her along the way. And really, I didn't do anything more really than I do with anyone else. She just was, you know, very observant and picked up on everything, and she was fabulous, a great helper. Gave me a big hug at the end, and I just felt like on that day, magic saved the day, and I think it changed the attitudes of the other kids there towards her, and maybe even, you know, her attitude towards them. What did I do? I just brought up an assistant and, you know, had her have a good time, I guess, and it changed everything. So that's an example of magic changing lives or saving the day, if you will. But I've got some now that, they're quite remarkable. And the first one you may have heard of before. The year was 1942. September 2nd of that year. Many wives found themselves raising their kids on their own because their husbands were overseas fighting in World War II. September 2nd was a Wednesday, and school was not in session. How do I know this? Well, it just so happens that Harry Blackstone Sr. was in town, and he had a matinee performance for some 1,000 children that day. Do you know the story? Well, there are various versions of the story. One version has the audience as many as 3,200 kids, which, as it turns out, that's not exactly accurate. The most popular version of the story has Harry Blackstone standing on stage when the theater manager comes over and whispers something in his ear, and that something was the fact that there was a fire raging next door and Blackstone had to get these kids out of the theater without causing a stampede. Fast-thinking Harry Blackstone then decides, wait a second. Actually, a lot of that isn't accurate either. The truth is better. The date and the year are correct. The theater was the Lincoln Theater in Decatur, Illinois. Next door to the theater was a drugstore, and something had caught fire in the basement of the drugstore. Fire trucks were already on the scene. At the theater, a movie had been playing for close to an hour, so the audience of mostly children was more than engaged. George Johnstone, a member of the Blackstone cast, had been hearing the faint sounds of fire trucks from time to time, and he asked one of the ushers if he knew what was going on. That's when George learned of the fire in the basement of the drugstore next door. The usher didn't seem to be too concerned, but George felt it best to tell Mr. B, and he went to the basement of the theater, where the dressing rooms were, and notified Mr. B, Harry Blackstone Sr., of the situation. Mr. B called for the theater manager, who came and assured Harry that there was no cause for concern, the fire would be out momentarily, and the show could continue as scheduled. It was Bunny Day at the theater, by the way. Mr. Blackstone would be giving away 35 live rabbits to kids in the audience, and I'm sure this helped to fill the theater to capacity. Fast forward now to 20 minutes till showtime. The situation had changed. The fire chief, several firemen, the theater manager, all headed down to the dressing rooms to talk to Harry. Due to the current situation, the best course of action would be to evacuate the theater, which meant first getting in the audience of children out safely. But how to do such a thing without causing a panic? You've no doubt heard the expression, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, the reason is it causes a panic. People will panic. While Blackstone and his staff and the theater managers tried to figure out what to do, the fire chief went out to check the latest status on the fire. He was back rather quickly. The new word was the fire next door was out of control. Any moment, the smoke could begin entering the theater. Action had to be taken now. They all departed for the stage. Blackstone explained his plan to the fire chief with this reply from the fire chief. "Damn it, Mr. Blackstone, this has got to work." Didn't sound like a resounding declaration of confidence. At any rate, the orchestra played a few bars, and then Harry Blackstone Sr. walked through the parted curtain to address the audience. And here is what he said. "Boys and girls, today we're going to attempt something never performed by a magician. A trick so large it cannot be done inside the theater. The backside exit doors are going to be opened, and we're going to all go outside to see this trick. The ushers are standing in the aisles will designate the rows to file out two abreast. My assistants will be out there among you, so anyone shouting, talking, running, or pushing will be sent back to your seats and not allowed to see the trick." What happened next was magic. The children exited calmly and in an orderly fashion. It took about 15 minutes to get them all out the door, and Mr. B, Mr. Blackstone, stood on stage the entire time directing the ushers on which section to move out next. The hardest part of the move was actually getting the adults out of the audience. They were content to stay seated until their kids returned, and the ushers had to get them out without tipping their hand. After they were out, every child, every person, Harry Blackstone Sr., Mr. B., returned to his dressing room in the basement. He sobbed for almost 5 minutes over the dramatic yet successful evacuation that took place. At any moment, it could have gone wrong. George Johnstone points out, if at any time someone yelled fire, the kids could have been trampled on. Even adults helping during the evacuation could have been injured. But thankfully, everyone got out safely. The next thing that had to be done was to get the Blackstone props out of the theater. No one could predict just how severe this fire was going to be. Mr. B threw off his jacket, went upstairs to help his crew, who were now frantically moving everything out into the alley and beyond. Heading this endeavor was Ted Banks, the stage manager for the company, and by the way, among the crew that day was a young Harry Blackstone Jr. Everything got moved out of the theater, and Blackstone put his jacket back on to watch the firemen. I guess you've got to keep up appearances around the audience, I suppose. And sure enough, a newspaper photographer captured an image of Blackstone in his tux, along with Ted Banks, both staring at the firemen who were rapidly attacking the blaze. The fire raged until 6 p.m. that evening. It severely damaged the drugstore and a florist shop, but the theater remained intact. It suffered from quite a bit of smoke, but no fire. As the fire raged during the day, mothers and parents began to learn of the situation. Countless parents descended upon downtown Decatur in hopes of finding their children. Again, thanks to the coordination between Blackstone, the theater management, and the fire department, all the kids were safe in one location. Inspecting the theater the next day, they discovered the smoky smell that morning within the theater, but according to reports, by the time the theater was open for the matinee, the smell was already gone. The Blackstone show was back on this afternoon. The crew reloaded everything back into the theater and were preparing costumes and such when someone realized a member of the company was missing. Ted Banks was not on site. Last he was seen was the night before going to the hotel. A phone call was placed to the hotel and they said that they would send someone to his room to check. A few minutes later, the news was relayed that Ted Banks was still in his hotel room. He had passed away during the night. With a mere 10 minutes till showtime, the Blackstone crew and company received this incredibly sad news. According to George Johnstone, that show that day was not one of the best Blackstone shows because everyone was in tears throughout the performance. Now, I'd like to speak a little bit more about Ted Banks. He was from England. His real name was Edward William Copen. He was a member of Fred Carnot's army of British music hall comedians. Carnot was a British theater impresario, and really, he was a comedian creator. In 1911, Fred Carnot sent some of his players over to the United States to appear in a play called A Night in an English Music Hall. Now, among those players, among those comedians sent over to be in his production, Charles Chaplin, Stan Laurel, and Ted Banks. Now, we know later that Charlie Chaplin struck out on his own to become famous in the Flickers, or what were the early silent movie motion pictures. And it's here that I've got to clear up some misinformation. Several magical periodicals and also some newspapers have it that Ted then started the Keystone Trio, along with Stan Laurel and another woman. But this was not the case. The Keystone Trio was started by Edgar Hurley and his wife, Ethel. Edgar and his wife were also former Carnot performers. Stan Laurel joined with them for a time until the group split up. Now, what happened to Ted Banks, William Copen, in the short period of time, I'm not exactly sure. But the next time we hear about him, he's working, apparently, for Thurston backstage. And then, eventually, in 1923, he landed a spot in the Blackstone show. In 1927, he married a member of the cast, Della Cowell. She became known by the stage name Sally Banks. So they were Ted and Sally Banks. There is a surprising article in Billboard magazine, April 17, 1937. It mentions that Banks, this time Ted, has worked for Blackstone for 14 years. And while in Wheeling, West Virginia, he left the show. He returned to Colon, Michigan, and was set to take up work on the West Coast later that year. However, on September 11th, 1937, Billboard magazine says that Ted has joined the Percy Abbott staff in Colon. In 1937, 38, and 39, and more, Ted was involved as stage manager for the Abbott's get-together and the IBM National Convention in 1939. On November 22nd, 1941, Ted Banks returned to the Blackstone Show. Now, why did he leave in the first place? I believe he got diagnosed with a heart condition and life on the road was just becoming too difficult. When he returned to the Blackstone show, he was given lighter duties because of his heart ailment. Apparently, some of the members of the cast teased him about this lighter duty, but as we have now learned, Ted Banks did die from a heart attack September 3rd, 1942, so he surely had a weak heart. He was only 50 years old when he passed away. Our next story takes place August 1991. Magician Julian Russell was performing on board the Oceanus cruise ship when disaster struck. The Oceanus was a Greek cruise liner, and it was sinking. The captain of the ship, the safety officer, and the senior crew were the first to abandon ship, leaving behind some 570 passengers to fend for themselves. Stepping into action was magician Julian Russell and entertainment director slash magician Robin Boltman. They helped the passengers onto the helicopter winches that hoisted them off the ship and to safety. Boltman cleared the area for the helicopters, manned the radio, freed animals on board, and along with Russell, were the last people to leave the ship. The only thing they got left behind was Julian Russell's show, worth some 1,900 pounds in value. If that wasn't crazy enough, several years in the future, Robin Boltman was working on board the Achille Lauro, December 1994. That ship burned and sunk off the coast of Somalia, and once again, Boltman helped the passengers to safety. I suppose in these cases, it isn't so much magic that saves the day, but rather magicians who save the day. But really, it's people of good character who stood against dramatic events and came out rewarded, knowing that they helped to save the lives of many, many people. So if you happen to have a story, a similar sort of story, would you do me a favor? You know, a story where a magician saves the day or magic saves the day. I'd love for you to share it with me. You can send the story to info@carnegiemagic.com. It doesn't have to be a grand story like, you know, a theater fire, but you heard the first story I told you just about the young kid that seemed to make a big difference in somebody's life. So if you have a story like that, please share it with me, and I may put together another compilation of these stories in the future. With any luck, the next episode of the Magic Detective Podcast will be an interview. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Well, my friends, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Magic Detective Podcast. Until next time, be well and stay safe.